The Toddcast Podcast. Follow on Instagram and Twitter at Toddcast Podcast.
Hello.
Dana Larson, how are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. You got me in mid-cough, that's funny, but yeah, I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, man. I'm good. It's been a few years. I think that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that you were on the afternoon show when I was doing it at CFOX. Probably, man, it's got to be like 10 years ago now, though. Long time ago.
That sounds about right,
it
yeah.
It rings a bell, yeah. Dana Larson is on the program now. You are the founder of the Vancouver Dispensary Society. What year did you establish this, and what kind of hoops did you have to jump through to get this thing launched?
Well, that was 10 years ago, and there was two other compassion clubs in the city that had been operating for a few years, and we decided to try to do the same thing, but to really do it in a bigger way and let people know what we were doing and try to teach others to emulate our example. So we were also the first one to really call ourselves a dispensary and kind of bring that word into vogue. And So we opened in 2008. In the downtown east side, we got very busy. We opened another one a couple of years later in the West End. But I also spent a lot of time teaching other people how to open their own dispensaries. And we did free classes, and I brought a lot of people through our place, and I showed them every aspect of how we operated and encouraged them to get their own going, either in Vancouver or in their hometown.
Right. And Dana, recently you've run into a roadblock, let's say. Tell us what's going on in your world for the last few weeks.
Well, it's really been going on for
probably
a few years.
You know?
We've had this case. Well, the last few days, you know, it's been very sad because we've had to shut down our dispensary at East Hastings.
It's been terrible.
Third oldest in the city after 10 years. And it was really a sad day to have to cease cannabis sales. And we've been fighting with the city, us and several other dispensaries. And the number had been getting whittled down. But they put in these bylaws, and these bylaws are written by Vision Vancouver when Harper was in power and legalization was, right, you know, a distant dream, right? And they were writing them for medical cannabis dispensaries, but they're very restrictive. They only are going to allow for about 20 shops in the whole city. They restrict them for most of the downtown east side. And it's a $30,000 fee, which is like 300 times what any other city in BC charges. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted them to look at these bylaws and change them and in the context of legalization. But dispensaries like ours, we're in a zone that's zoned for industrial use. And under their bylaws, if your area is zoned for industrial use, you can't have a dispensary and there's no appealing that. So, you know, we fought in court and we fought other ways for a long time, but we would have had a contempt of court charge against us if we had stayed open, and that could be very severe punishments, right? So we decided to stop cannabis sales there at 880 East Hastings, but we're still open. We're just not selling cannabis, so we're trying to find other ways to serve our community.
So you're close to killing someone if they say the word zoning around you right now.
Well, it's frustrating, you know, and actually I'm going to be going to City Hall tomorrow because one of the councillors has brought forward this motion to talk about how they can increase cannabis access in the downtown east side as a safer option for opiates, which I think is a good thing. We actually do a lot of giving away of cannabis to these different projects. One's called the High Hopes Foundation. It used to operate out of the overdose prevention site on East Hastings, and we also contribute to a program called the Cannabis Substitution Project. And, you know, I don't think cannabis is going to help every opiate user or heroin user quit, but certainly I've talked to lots of people who are heroin users who say when they're jonesing or when they're in withdrawal or when they're just trying to quit or reduce their use, that cannabis comes in really handy. And I've definitely talked to people who told me that they entirely got off of opiates, largely using cannabis as a substitution. And that, you know, whoever people who are being helped by that, I've had many people tell me that to my face and show me the success they've had with that. So it should be an option for people, especially during this terrible overdose crisis.
And are you super optimistic that the city might change their tone, or?
Well, I don't know what's going to happen. I worry because, you know, there's this legal cannabis coming in, and the problem with the legal system, and this isn't the city's fault, but the cannabis is not very good. It's very expensive, highly taxed, mm-hmm, and a lot of extracts and medicinal grade products aren't really available. So the federal government hasn't licensed enough growers. So a lot of the stores are empty and the product is not always very good and it's very expensive. And especially if you're talking about people who are, you know, opiate users and who are living in the downtown east side, having a legal cannabis shop open in their neighborhood it may not be that helpful. It may not substitute. You know, they're used to getting cannabis at reasonable prices and getting these kind of options. And the legal shops are going to be forbidden from giving away cannabis for less than they paid for it or giving it away for free in any way. They just can't do that, right? So, you know, I hope the city, you know, the city has a lot of power when it comes to this stuff. And so they have a lot of options. And I think Vancouver can continue to sort of lead Canada in sensible drug policies and use their civic power to put in policies that make sense and that will help save lives in our city.
And I'm not sure that that the average citizen, like, I don't feel that there's been enough done to kind of educate the casual smoker, the casual medicator. Like, can you walk down the street smoking a joint? Can you have an eighth in your car as you're going to a buddy's place to hang out? And I get that some of the onus is on Joe Public to educate themselves, but I just don't feel that the government's done a good enough job.
Well, I agree. It's really unclear. And I think people aren't aware, even here in BC, of some of the ridiculous laws that the BC NDP passed on cannabis. I think they really, you know, failed to put in a good system, and we're going to be paying the price for that for many years to come. I don't think most people know that, okay, you can grow four plants per household under federal law.
Right.
But did you know that in BC law, if somebody can see one of your plants from the street, they can call the cops on you, and you can get a $5,000 fine and up to 3 months in jail for somebody seeing your legal cannabis plant, just if it's in sight. And I don't think most people in BC know that, and I'm sure people aren't going to be getting jail sentences. They'll probably get fines or warnings or whatever, but what is the logic of not letting, like, forcing people, even if it's in your window or something, right, in a secure environment? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you can do U-brew with beers and wines, and that's legal, but yet we're not even anywhere near where we should be with cannabis.
Yeah, a lot of these rules are really harsh. Even in areas where maybe there should be a penalty, they're really skewed compared to alcohol. Like, if you get caught drinking in a canoe while you're on a boat, in a canoe, you can get a fine of a couple hundred dollars, right? But if you get caught smoking a joint in a canoe, it's a $5,000 fine and up to 3 months in jail.
Wow.
And so, yeah, maybe there should be a penalty or whatever, like alcohol, but why are we treating it like 20 times more harshly than alcohol? And if I had to be in a canoe with somebody, I'd rather be with the guy smoking the joint than the guy getting drunk, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, maybe...
Hands down.
Yeah, but at least it should be treated the same, right? But treating it way more harshly.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of these things that they put in
that?
BC. Like, people don't know.
Why? Like, why? You're right in the thick of it. Like, what's the reasoning behind it? Why do they crucify it?
I don't, you know, I talked to Mike Farnworth, and he's like really the main guy in the BC NDP that is in charge of this file and pushing this stuff forward. And I have spoken to him about it, and I don't, you know, I was asking, like, what is the constituency that really wanted you to not let anybody see their cannabis plants? Like, who was lobbying for that? What made you make that particular choice? Because no other province has done that.
Really?
A couple of provinces, Manitoba and Quebec, have tried to ban all home cultivation entirely.
Right.
So they've gone a step further. But no other province has this kind of no-see-em rule around the cannabis plants, that they can't be spotted or you can get punished. That's unique to BC. And I didn't really understand, like, what... He said, "Oh, you can just put a screen up around it. You know, it's not a big deal." And I thought, "Well, isn't your government also running ads to say that we should stop stigmatizing drug users and that drug users are regular people in the community?" And I support that. But then, if you're going to destigmatize drug users, but if somebody sees your dirty cannabis plant, you can go to jail. Like, I don't really understand that. It bothers me.
No sense. Yeah. And how old were you when you first smoked marijuana?
I was in between grade 11 and grade 12, so I guess I was just coming into, I was around 18.
Is there any story in the
Well, first, a couple, first I mean, I have, I, you know, I definitely, I tried alcohol and tobacco beforehand, and when I tried cannabis, I knew that this was something I really liked and I was going to do a lot of over the rest of my life. I didn't necessarily know it was going to be so all-encompassing, but I smoked at a Pink Floyd concert. That was one of the first times, and that was my older brother, and that was a memorable experience. And but I always knew that cannabis, was something that I think was going to be with me for a long time. And it's such a positive thing for so many people's lives. You know, using cannabis for the vast majority of people, it's only positive experiences.
Right,
that they have with this plant.
And let's be honest, if there was deaths or, you know, something that kind of hampered, health, they would take that and shove it down our throats.
Well, there's now another coroner recently somewhere saying, they've got the first death caused by cannabis in the USA. And it's just somebody who dies, and they can't figure out why they died, but they have cannabis in their system.
Right.
And so they're making, it must have been the cannabis.
Has to be.
But that's not how it works, right? And but that's definitely something that gets pushed all the time, any negative thing. And, you know, all the research and studies that have been done over the last few decades are always, you know, things that are looking for a negative result of cannabis get way more funding than things that are trying to find a positive result or something that could be beneficial.
Right.
So there's a real skewing there, and hopefully that's going to change over the coming years.
Right, right. Let's get outside of cannabis activism, politics, and of course what you're known for, Dana. I'd love to get you to know you a little bit more, and I'm curious, which shows right now are you binge-watching?
Oh, well, like everybody, I think I was pretty bummed out about the last season of Game of Thrones, you know? I watched way too many videos, but this is how it should have ended, and I even actually one night sat down and wrote out, like, what I thought the better ending would be, because it was not a very, you know, it was a great show, but they kind of failed on that one.
Like 7.5 seasons were really good, and then it was the end of the last half.
They're going to be doing Star Wars now, right? They got tired, I think. It's a long time, it's a lot of work and a lot of time, but maybe they should have handed it off to somebody else and let them finish it up or keep it going.
Or they maybe should have just waited for Buddy to, you know, write the final book.
Wow, you know, that could be a long wait, though, too, I think.
Wasn't there like 500,000 people that petitioned after and was like, oh, you know, write the... I'm like, come on, guys, really?
Yeah, that's not good.
If it's that easy, then why don't you just write an awesome series? Are you a fan of the superhero movies that are being released these, you know,
I've seen every Marvel movie, most of them more than once. I like the Endgame, and I like the Infinity War. I think Infinity War I liked a bit more, actually, but they're both fine films and had a lot of stuff going on in there, so I enjoyed those quite a bit.
Yeah, I was looking forward to seeing how they were going to, you know, obviously with everybody dying at the end of... Infinity War, like how are they going to pull everybody back? An interesting way they did it. If you could have a superpower, which power would you want to have?
Oh, that's funny. You know, I kind of feel like I sometimes like I'm sort of a superhero where you have to kind of do some of my work in a secret kind of way. You know, I haven't always been able to talk about all the stuff I do in the cannabis world or whatever. Right, some stuff's got to stay on the down low, and other ways it's got to. I can talk about things, so I sort of feel like that sometimes. I've got like an alternate identity or something, or sort of doing this stuff on two levels.
Mm.
Where
is Dana? Oh, that's just a guy that looks like him that's wearing glasses.
When I was a kid, I used to, light powers and stuff, and being able to like make a suit out of light and fly around, kind of like, I don't know, it was sort of like Iron Man, but with like beams of light instead of an actual physical suit. I spent quite a bit of time when I was a child fantasizing about flying around and
zapping
people with laser beams and stuff like that.
Were you Marvel? Were you a DC guy? What were you?
Probably more Marvel, although I really read the kid. I read them both, and it just kind of depended, whatever. They were all good. I really liked Watchmen and Alan Moore and all his stuff, and
Alan
I read
Moore
all his comics I have some of his collections and things, and he's very influential. Him and Grant Morrison, they hate each other. Kind of
do they really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Alan Moore thinks that Grant Morrison is like a copycat. Like, I get into chaos magic, and the next thing you know, he's doing chaos magic, and I was the comics wizard, and now he wants to be a comic wizard, and you know, whatever. But it's just funny. But I like, you know, both their things. I've got a few big collections up there.
Oh, cool.
Of their stuff on my shelf.
Yeah, same. What was the music like in the Larson household as a kid growing up? Like, which bands are your parents playing the most?
Well, my parents, I mean, I had two older brothers, and so their musical choices were quite influential on me. So, I mean, we listened to a lot of what would now be classic rock, you know. My older brother was really into Morrison and had a big Jim Morrison poster on his wall, and so I liked what they liked. So, and Pink Floyd, I think Pink Floyd is one of the bands that I still listen to fairly often now that I listened to back then. Like, I don't really put on Door stuff too often or whatever. It's nice, and I like it, but I don't necessarily seek it out, but I still once in a while, I got to listen to this song or whatever by Pink Floyd.
What's
right?
The best?
The right
is it Dark Side? Like, that's so tough.
Yeah, I think Dark Side, and the I think about the Time song about slipping away, the moments in a dull day and wasting your time. And, you know, I thought I had something more to say or whatever. I think about that sometimes, and just in my life, whenever I'm goofing around on the computer or not being productive, and then I think, I got to get active here. Time's a ticking, right? Time's a ticking, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that. What was your first concert?
I think Pink. Well, actually, you know, I saw Gowan, You're a Strange Animal.
Okay, yeah, that's what.
That was just it was at the P&E, and my brother had an extra ticket. I went with him and his girlfriend, and I think that was my first concert. Although I remember distinctly lying to my friends, like in grade two, and telling them that I'd been to see Kiss. What? My brother had been to see it, and he had described it to me. And for whatever reason, I told my friends that I'd been there, and I just told them what you told me. Oh, it was really good when this part happened. And my other friend, I remember him telling me the same thing. And I think back, I think there's no way he went to this concert either, right? He was probably doing the same thing that I did.
Sure.
And someone in his family or something heard about it. We were just trying to bullshit each other that we'd been to Kiss.
And man, what is it with that band? Like, everybody cites Kiss as one of the most influential. It doesn't matter, even if they're not in bands, or like, everybody just like, oh, Kiss was like one of the first bands to really grab me.
They're very memorable. They had that movie where they were in the theme park, and each of them has like superpowers.
Yeah, was it something?
And they can like breathe fire, and they could jump around really far, and they kind of got weird. Like, weird powers. And as a kid, I thought, oh, this is so cool. And I've watched clips of it now, and I'm like, oh, this is not very good at all, right? But
But at least they were doing it, though. It's funny. They almost had like a social media following in the 70s.
Well, Gene Simmons, he's into weed now. That brings us back to weed again, right? Gene Simmons,
yes,
who spent most of his life being like against weed and drugs and all for losers, and weed is for losers. And then one of the legal companies gave him a bunch of money, and he became their spokesperson. And he's like,
suddenly,
what?
Yeah.
This marijuana stuff's not so bad.
Once there's green involved, no pun intended.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Are you a big sports guy? Are you watching the NBA?
You know, I said one of the reasons I'm probably never going to be successful in politics is because I have a hard time pretending that I really care about sports and stuff. Like, you know, I mean, I'm aware that there's the NBA thing going on and that with the Raptors, but we lost the game, I think, by 1 point, right?
Yeah.
I didn't watch it, but that sounds exciting anyways.
106,
105. Yeah, but I don't really care about that kind of stuff. I just don't want there to be any riots. That's the main thing. It seems whenever we do well in something, everybody, whether we win or lose, they decide to go smash stuff. So
yeah, no,
I prefer there not to be any riot.
Makes no sense, yeah. Three more questions, and thank you again, Dana, for doing this. Do you believe that aliens have visited Earth?
I do not, but my brother is very convinced that they have.
Oh.
And that the moon was maybe created by aliens or something.
Really?
It's weird. It is weird that the moon and the sun appear to be the exact same size from Earth, right? Like, there's no reason for it. It's a very coincidence, right? But he thinks that's like evidence that there's somebody built it for that purpose to show us stuff or whatever. But I would be very surprised if there's no other life in the universe. I think it's got to be out there. But I don't think, because if it had to come to Earth to start life here, well, then where did they come from, right? Like, it's got to start somewhere. And I don't think aliens have been here, but. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure your brother tries to.
That being said, I've communicated with non corporeal spiritual beings while on ayahuasca and other substances. So, I mean, I do believe in other realities and spirits and things, I guess, because I've met them, you know. So,
right.
I mean, I'm very aware that those can just be things in my brain that are happening, but they sure seem real, and it's hard to tell, you know. So, everything ultimately is things happening in your brain, really, right? So.
Mm.
They came from other dimensions. I can maybe believe that a little more. I don't know, but come flying over here in a ship or something, that just doesn't, and then not like just buzzing us, and you know, like the idea, it's like teenage aliens coming just to like make fun of us, grab a few cows, fuck them up just to confuse people, make us wonder what's going on, get people up to their ship, stick something in their butt, send them back down. You know, I don't think that doesn't make any sense.
Right. Have you ever had a near-death experience? And not necessarily where you're floating over your bed and walking to a
Well, I almost died doing nitrous oxide when I was younger.
Really?
I wasn't really, I mean, like, it was a, yeah, and nitrous oxide can be wonderful done the right way, right? But I was young and stupid, and nitrous oxide, it's an anesthetic, right? And normally when they give it to you, they mix it with oxygen at the right ratio so you don't die. And if you do it at a party or something, people normally give you a balloon, right? So you just have a little bit. You can't really overdo it with the balloon. It's just a toke or two, right? But this was many years ago, and I do not recommend anybody do this. But my friend had acquired a big tank of nitrous oxide, right? Like a big 4-foot tank. And we would just crack it open and like put cover over the air holes in the little mask or whatever and like inhale till you kind of passed out. And that's the wrong way to do nitrous. Like, it was not a good thing. And I remember seeing this four-dimensional sphere at one point and hearing the noises or whatever. And then I realized I'm like laying on my back and my friends are like, don't swallow your tongue. And I was doing the funky chicken. And that's usually the first sign of something bad, right? It's heavier than air, so it'll like settle in your lungs or settle in a room or something if it's not, you know, it's like, so you can suffocate by having it like that, right? And so it wasn't really a near, I mean, I guess I think it was the nitrous. I don't think I was experiencing what I was experiencing because of the death thing, but I don't know. But I'd say that's probably, I mean, I've taken, you know, different substances over my life and that, but that's, I think, the one time where if I had taken another couple of breaths or things had gone differently, maybe I don't know, maybe it could have gone worse.
Wow, yeah, that's...
But I've never, like, otherwise had, like, a near-death thing where I'm seeing the white light or anything like that. I was seeing a four-dimensional sphere at that time. That was a nitrous vision.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. last question.
Because you're getting me to talk about stuff I never normally talk about. No other people ever ask me these things, so...
I know, right?
So this is good, yeah.
And this will be the toughest, I think. What's your career highlight? Do you have one? Like, does one thing stick out above the rest?
Well, I think there's been a couple. I mean, some of the stuff I've done, I think I worked really hard on and didn't really accomplish much at all, ultimately. And other things, I think, were influential. We did a campaign in 2013, the Sensible BC campaign, where we tried to get people to sign up to have a referendum in the province to decriminalize possession.
I do remember that.
And we didn't get enough signatures. It's almost impossible to accomplish that. But yeah. I think that campaign was very influential. Like, I think it made a lot of people become activists who had just otherwise kind of sat around at home and wanted to do stuff but didn't know what to do. And by giving them and it was really a leap of faith on my part. I had no idea what was going to happen with that, if anyone was going to sign up, if it was going to work. And like right as we were launching it, a friend of ours in the north, Tim Terrace, right? A friend of ours in Terrace won the lottery, won like $25 million and gave me like $200,000 to fund the campaign. And like it was just this miracle that this guy who we knew was an activist happened to win the lottery right when we were doing the campaign, and all these things fell into place. And it was during that campaign that Trudeau first announced that he supported legalization of marijuana. And it was in response to one of our canvassers who's actually here with me hanging out. And so I thought that helped. I don't know if we would have gotten sort of legalization without that campaign. Mm. And I also think getting everybody to open dispensaries. I think it wasn't just me doing that. Other ones had opened before me, but I put a lot of effort and I showed a lot of people. And the first like five places that opened in Vancouver after we did, they all met with me and consulted with me and got a bunch of free advice. And I caught people calling me from all across the country, like around 2009 until really just a couple of years ago. I would be getting at least one call a week from somebody wanting to open a dispensary, and I would spend a lot of time with them. And although we've lost a lot of those places, I think that was also crucial, that we needed hundreds of shops openly disobeying the law and creating this whole controversy of dispensaries everywhere selling cannabis. I think that was necessary to get the government to change the law. Like, we had to do it first, and then they're going to allow us to do this in some way after we've already been doing it for a long time, right? So I think those kind of things are things that I think had a big impact, you know. I've been in the NDP a long time. I don't think I accomplished anything. I traveled across to NDP conventions all across the country, like in every province. There was a period where me and my friends would go to every NDP convention and we talked to the locals, and we passed resolutions on marijuana and drug policy in like every province in the Yukon. And all those resolutions and things that we were passed by the grassroots of the party, they all got ignored as terms of policy or affecting what the government did or what they talked about. Like, and not a single one of them really like was like, oh, our people want us to talk about marijuana legalization more. We're going to make that a priority. Like, it's frustrating. You know, I thought working within the democratic process is just not as successful as just being civilly disobedient and just doing it and making them deal with the reality. I think that's probably where I'm going to be focusing on more in the future, is just making stuff happen and less trying to like, get, you know, the politicians will follow after you've already made the reality change.
Right. It's always like easier to ask for forgiveness than permission.
That is exactly true. And I think that's got to be a guiding philosophy of our of our activism and our movement in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're a good man. Thank you for everything you've done, for cannabis legalization in Canada. Obviously, you're one of the key players in that. So as far as, Joe Public, thank you so much, man, for everything you've done.
And it's probably one of the funnest interviews I've ever done. So thanks a lot for having me on, and I'm always happy to chat anytime.
You bet. Of course, we'll keep rooting for you in the Vancouver Dispensary Society. You are simply at Dana Larson online. You're pretty active, pretty engaged, which is great to see.
Yeah, I tweet almost nonstop,
which is great.
I'm on Facebook quite a bit too, and I try to keep the message out there every way I can.
Right. Okay, cool. Well, thanks again, Dana, and I guess we'll see you online.
Subscribe on iTunes at Toddcast Podcast.